This morning, the primary text is going to be from Genesis chapter 45. We're going to conclude this morning a series we've been in for the past 5 weeks. This is the sixth week. We've been focused on a man by the name of Joseph. Joseph was one of the main characters in the book of Genesis. Genesis is a book about origins and beginnings, the beginning of humans, the beginning of time, the beginning of the human experience, the beginning of God's covenant with, that's his relationship with humans. It's all contained at the beginning in the book of Genesis, which means beginnings. The importance of Joseph is part in noted by the fact that his story takes up a generous portion of Genesis, probably starting at around 29 with the family of Joseph and all the way through Jacob and all the way through the rest of the book, chapter 50. But also, as I've been noting from week to week, that Joseph was mentioned in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, where the Hebrew writer is talking about faith. He starts off in Hebrews chapter 1 by saying, "Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Indeed, by faith, our ancestors received approval. Then verse number 6, it says, "Without faith, it is impossible to please God. For whoever would approach him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him." And if you continue to read through chapter 11, the Hebrew writer starts mentioning all these spiritual ancestors, Noah and Jacob and Abraham and all these characters. You get down to verse number 22, they mention Joseph. By faith, in verse number 22, "By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones." And for weeks, we've been working our way through the story of Joseph to try to uncover what is meant by this faith that Joseph had, that the Hebrew writer highlights him talking about his bones. And we've gone through this story. For the previous 5 weeks, we've gotten ourselves in the middle of this story, which includes family drama that has agitated within us a host of emotions, anger, sadness, bewilderment, bewildered at the high level of dysfunction. A man by the name of Jacob has two wives who are sisters, and he marries those two, and in that culture, the two wives are trying to vie for the attention of their husband, and the best way to garner, get the attention of your husband is to have children, particularly sons. And so Leah has a bunch of sons. She has six, but Rachel at first she couldn't have any, and it started this sibling rivalry, and they're just doing everything that they could to get the attention of their husband. So Rachel says, "Hey, you can have my maidservant," and Jacob conceived with her and had two kids. And then Leah says, "You can have my maidservant." And then Jacob conceived two sons with her. And then finally Rachel had children. And because Jacob loved Rachel so much, his children by her were those that he favored. Particularly there was Joseph, the firstborn of the woman he loved, Rachel. And Jacob loved him like none other. He was his favorite. Jacob had in total 12 sons, 13 children in all. He had a daughter named Dinah. But his favorite was Joseph. And we read the story and looked at the story of how Jacob made for Joseph a special coat, ornate, multicolored coat. Some call it a technicolor coat. And this just drew the ire of his brothers. They hated him, it says. They didn't like him. And they conspired to kill him. But instead of killing him or murdering him, they threw him in this pit, and they came up with a plan to sell him. He was sold, and he became a servant, a slave in Egypt. And so there he is in a foreign land. But while in Egypt, it goes from bad to worse. He's set up. He's put in prison. left there. He's in the darkest jail, which is for the worst criminals, seemingly left there to rot in prison. But through the providence and grace of God, Joseph interprets some dreams, and he lands a position where he is now second in command in all of Egypt. He was able to put to use his gifts as an administrator, a strategic planner, a manager to create a plan for Egypt, because they were going to go through a famine and they were going to go through a time of plenty. So they stored up a bunch of food so that Egypt would survive. And then people from all over the world would come to Egypt for food relief. That's about the summary of what we've done for the past several weeks. Last week we looked at the occurrence when his brothers, who were living in a land called Canaan, had to come down to Egypt, come up to Egypt, and to get food for the family. And last week we saw this reunion where Joseph sees, for the first time in years, after being mistreated, left for dead by his brothers, he sees his brothers. They don't recognize him. But he recognizes them, and he puts them through a series of tests, because he's wanting to know if his younger brother is alive. He wants to know if his father is alive, and that's what we looked at last week. And if you read the story, it gets kind of weird, because Joseph is treating his brothers and doing all these weird things. Well, what we find out after they were there the first time, they went back home, and Joseph said, I need to see your youngest brother. You need to bring him back. And Father Jacob said, you can't take my son. But they were out of food. They were, you know, they had to do something. So the father finally agreed, go ahead, take my son. I'm probably going to lose him. So whatever happens, happens. And so they go down a second time, and they take Benjamin with them. And Joseph sees Benjamin. And again, if you read this story, it's so emotional. It's such a beautifully written and curated narrative of the emotions of Joseph, who sees his youngest brother and he can't contain himself, and he goes to another room because he starts to weep. It reminds me when I was a college student at Rochester College in Michigan, and I would come back home to visit, and you know, it's about time for me to leave. I could never find my father. You know, I'm like, I'm saying goodbye to everybody. Like, where's my dad? Like, you know, I'm going to say, you know, peace out, pops, you know. And one day I found out where he would disappear to. He would go out to the garage. And so I remember the one time I go out to the garage, and he was just weeping. And he was like, just go. Just, he didn't want to see me. He didn't want me to see him crying. You know, we get like that sometime. And I'm reminded of that when I read this emotional story of Joseph, who sees his brother, that he probably thought, look, if my brothers did this to me, they'll probably do this to my youngest brother. But he's alive. Then Joseph goes and he does some more stuff. He gives them bags of food. He puts their money back in their bags like he did the previous time. But this time, he took one of his special cups and he put that in the bag with Benjamin. And so as they're leaving, his officials go after them, and he catch them. And they catch Benjamin with the bag, with the cup, and they bring them back. And the guys think, oh no, we've done it this time. And so that's sort of the background of what I'm about to read. I'm about to read a portion from Genesis chapter 45. After all those events, I left out a bunch of things. When Joseph saw that his youngest brother was there, he had them all come in for dinner. He gave Benjamin five times what he gave all the rest of the brothers. I mean, you have to go read the story. But then we get to Genesis 45. So the brothers have been brought back after being accused of stealing something from Joseph. And it says this. It says, then Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, send everyone away from me. So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. He said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt, and now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty. And now, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my own mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father how greatly I am honored in Egypt and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here.' Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, while Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him." Years ago, TNT, the television station, had a series of Bible movies. And there was one titled Joseph. And that was my favorite. And this scene in that movie was one that certainly brought me to tears as he revealed to his brothers who he was. The biblical text, as you read it, is no less emotional and dramatic. As you see this story come full circle, where Joseph is crying, not just over his youngest brother Benjamin, but now all of his brothers. Certainly when the news of his son's survival reaches Jacob, the father, that's going to be an emotional time for Jacob to think and to know that your son, who you thought was dead, is now alive, is going to be a cause for overwhelming euphoria. And upon learning that he was going to Egypt to see his son, who has survived what he thought was sure death, Jacob meets God. He goes to worship. Verses 1 through 5 in chapter 46, when Israel set out on his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba, he offered sacrifice to God of his father Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And Jacob says, "Here I am." Then he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again." There's a couple things you ought to see from this vision that Jacob had. That God in Egypt, in a foreign land, he was going to expand the family of Jacob. What God was saying is that in Egypt, I'm going to create a nation of people. And also, know this, you're not going to stay in Egypt. In literary forms, this is what we call foreshadowing. If you continue to read the narrative of God's people, the book of Exodus, and so forth and so on, you'll see that's exactly what happens. Israel increases in number, but they don't stay in Egypt. The story of Exodus is them being brought out of Egypt. The rest of the story, Jacob, his brothers, Joseph, again, filled with the emotional roller coaster of life. Jacob is old. He's about to die. There's emotions there. He takes time to bless all of his kids, including Joseph. This is what he says to Joseph as he's blessing Joseph. Jacob is on his deathbed. He's blessing Joseph. He says, Joseph is a fruitful bough, a fruitful bough by a spring. His branches run over the wall. The archers fiercely attack him. They shot at him and pressed him hard, yet his bow remained taut, and his arms were made agile by the hands of the mighty one of Jacob, by the name of the shepherd, the rock of Israel, by the God of your father who will help you, by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and womb. The blessings of your father are stronger than the blessings of the eternal mountains. The bounties of the everlasting hills may be on the head of Joseph, on the brow of him who was set apart from his brother. Jacob knew that he could now die. He's seen his favorite child. He has blessed his favorite child, and that's exactly what happens. Jacob, he dies. But he made his son's promise that if he dies in this land, that they would take his burial remains back home. He had purchased a burial plot in Canaan. He said, take my things back home. There's still things to be done. If you read chapter 50, verses 15 through 21, I won't take time to read that. We read that Joseph still had some unfinished business, and their father is dead. The brothers, they come together. They say, man, we've got to do something. We wronged our brother. We got to make amends. And they all come together, and Joseph forgives his brother. And Joseph also repeats what seemingly has been the theme and the moral of this great narrative. This is Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, where Joseph says, even though you intended, talking to his brothers, to do harm to me, God intended it for good in order to preserve a numerous people as he is doing today. Joseph was able to piece together that all the mishaps, all the misfortune, all the hardships, the prison, the betrayal, the false accusations, living in a foreign land, all of that was done so that he would be instrumental in preserving his family, guaranteeing the survival of his family. He was elevated out of a pit to a place of prominence to preserve his people. Now, church, I'm not saying that every bad circumstance that you go through is going to result in the preserving of a generation of a people. I am saying that God does have the power to turn our mishaps, our misfortune, those moments where we were victims of injustice. He does have the power to use those things for the benefit, to the benefit of others, even our own communities. God has done this throughout history. There's a story that comes to mind that really, I think, shows this, exhibits this in a very real way. Jamil McGee is a resident of a town called Benton Harbor, Michigan. If you know anything about Benton Harbor, Michigan is a town that has been riddled with racial injustice for years. Benton Harbor has a twin cities right next to each other called St. Joseph's. Benton Harbor is predominantly black. St. Joseph's is predominantly white. The disparity and poverty, you see the, you know, you cross over the river and it's just, it's night and day, literally. And as a result, many social injustices have taken place in Benton Harbor. I want you to see the story. I think I've showed this clip before of what happened to Jamil McGee when he was arrested by a white police officer named Andrew Collins. And let's see if God might be able to use this situation for a greater good. Let's watch.
It all went down on this block in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Back in 05, Jamil McGee says he was minding his own business when a police officer accused him of and arrested him for dealing drugs.
You saying the officer made it up?
Yeah, it was all made up.
Of course, a lot of accused men make that claim, but not many arresting officers agree.
So you phonied the report?
I did. I falsified the report.
This is former Benton Harbor police officer Andrew Collins.
Were you just trying to chalk up an arrest?
Basically, the start of that day, I was going to make sure I had another drug arrest.
And in the end, you put an innocent guy in jail?
Correct. Yeah.
You lost everything.
I lost everything. My only goal was to seek him when I got home and to hurt him.
Really?
That was my goal.
Eventually, that crooked cop was caught, served a year and a half for falsifying many police reports, planting drugs, and stealing.
Of course, Jamel was exonerated, but he still spent 4 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. Today, both men are back here in Benton Harbor, which is a small town. Maybe a little too small.
Hey guys, thank you.
Last year, by sheer coincidence, they both ended up at Mosaic, a faith-based employment agency where they now work side by side in the same cafe.
Oh, excuse me.
And it was in these cramped quarters that the bad cop and the wrongfully accused had no choice but to have it out.
And I said, honestly, I have no explanation. All I can do is say I'm sorry.
And Jamel says that was all it took.
That was pretty much what I needed to hear.
Today, they're not only cordial.
Saturday, we went to the trampoline park.
They're friends.
We talk about life.
Such close friends. Not long ago, Jamel actually told Andrew he loved him.
And I just started weeping because he doesn't owe me that. I don't deserve that, you know?
Did you forgive for his sake or for yours?
No, for our sake. Not just us, for our sake.
Jamel went on to tell me about his Christian faith and his hope for a kinder mankind. He wants to be an example. So now he and Andrew give speeches together about the importance of forgiveness and redemption.
I'll grab this one, set it over there.
And clearly, if these two guys from the coffee shop can set aside their bitter grounds, what's our excuse? Steve Hartman, on the road, in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
This was a report from CBS News years later. This took place several years ago. These guys are still close friends. They still go out and do events together. But I was watching a recent interview that Jamel gave, and he says that when he was in prison for 4 years, he got into many fights, violent fights, that he won. And he says every fight that he got into, these violent clashes, he always pretended that the other person was that cop. So he was full of rage. You put me in this pit. You got me away from my family. You destroyed my life. Yet years later, he was able to reach a place of grace and forgiveness, such that he said that me forgiving him is much larger than just me and him. But it has benefit for all of us. You know, I'm in some type of way, church, as I look at what's going on in our world right now. Because when we lose sight that our actions, our faith actions, might absolutely have implications on folks beyond us, and that it might impact and be good for all of us. You know, what would happen if Israel and Palestine came together and made peace? Do you realize the impact that that would have on the world? What if Russia and Ukraine came together and had peace? What if Republicans and Democrats stopped acting like children and made peace? That would have benefit for all of us. But one of the reasons why we're not so interested in that is because we're so busy, consumed with our own selves, and we forget that we are connected to the rest of humanity. And our faith actions have impact on everybody. We're all connected. There was a sociologist that says that, you know what, every human on earth are connected by 6 degrees. Have you ever heard of that? Have you ever played the Kevin Bacon game? Anyone here played the Kevin Bacon game? The Kevin Bacon game is a game where you try to connect the actor with Kevin Bacon because he's been in so many movies, and you say, hey, can you connect Tom Cruise to Kevin Bacon? And so you start talking about like the movies that people were in. So how do you connect Tom Cruise to Kevin Bacon? And so okay, you say, all right, Tom Cruise was in he was in Collateral with Jamie Foxx, and Jamie Foxx was in this new movie, The Burial, with Tommy Lee Jones, and Tommy Lee Jones was in JFK with Kevin Bacon. So I got to thinking, I wonder if this 6 degree stuff really works. So there's a guy that's been in the news lately. His name is, how many people ever heard of Will Smith? Y'all heard of Will Smith? I started thinking, how could I connect myself to Will Smith? Let's try this. When I was a kid in Buffalo, there was a collision shop next door, and one day there was a football player that came to get his car fixed. My father came over and said, hey, Reggie McKenzie, who is an offensive lineman for the Buffalo Bills, is next door. So I went across the street or next door, and I met Reggie McKenzie. He was an offensive lineman. He was a great offensive lineman. How great was he? He was one of the lead blockers for a guy by the name of O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson was a running back. Sorry, guys. This is a bad example, but just stay with me. O.J. Simpson was a running back for the Buffalo Bills. And so there's a picture of him with Reggie McKenzie. Now, you know, O.J., after he played football, became an actor, I'm putting that in quotes, and so he was in a movie called Naked Gun with a guy by the name of George Kennedy. George Kennedy is a famous actor. You heard of George Kennedy? George Kennedy was in a movie called Airport 77 with a guy by the name of Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon was in a movie with Will Smith called The Legend of Bagger Vance. I just connected myself to Will Smith in five moves. We're doing a movie next year, like Men in Black 10 or something like that. We are all connected. You all could do the same thing. I guarantee that you have met somebody who knew somebody, who met somebody, who was in the same room with somebody. We're all connected. And when we understand that we are more connected than we are divided, we'll begin to pay more attention to our actions, our faith actions. Forgiving others isn't just about the two people involved in the conflict. It has deeper and deeper implications. We started this series talking about bones. Joseph, as he is on his deathbed, he remains in Egypt. He's on his deathbed. He says, as surely as God lives, like, you're going to be here for a while, but I need you to know that God one day is going to take you up out of here. And when he takes you up out of here, you take my bones with you, and you take them to Canaan. What was that? How was that demonstrating faith? Because Joseph had faith. Even though it hadn't begun, it would take hundreds of years later before this all took place. Joseph had faith that God was going to deliver his people to their own land. You want to know how that all turns out? You have to go to the book of Joshua, chapter 24, verse number 32. It says the bones of Joseph, which the Israelites had brought up from Egypt, were buried at Shechem. This is after they had taken over Canaan. So they did exactly what Joseph had asked them to do, brought their bones up. And so we come back to the Hebrew writer, who says, by faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bone. Joseph's faith was directly connected to God's deliverance of Israel. There is no Exodus story of being brought out of Egypt without the faith of Joseph. Now, many of you, many of us thinking right here that my faith in God sitting in Reynoldsburg is not going to have no big impact on life and in the world like Joseph. You don't know that. You just simply don't know what it's going to mean for the rest of the world when you put all of your faith, your hope, and trust in God. When you trust God better than the media, when you trust God better than the news cycles, when you trust God better than your own emotions and motives sometimes. When you trust God to do what he is calling you to do, when you put faith in God's story, in God's plan, it might have worldwide implications. You think about the moments that God put you in positions that if you weren't there, the survival of someone, how many times have you been the person that someone's been stranded on the road and you were the one that saved them, perhaps saving them from some greater danger? It's because God puts us in these positions to have impact on the world. So keep your faith and your trust in God and allow him to transform you, to transform your households, to transform your neighborhoods, to transform cities, to transform states, to transform countries, to transform this world. The issues in Israel and Palestine didn't start overnight. Something that's been growing over thousands and thousands of years. And perhaps it will take another 100 to get them out of that. But it's got to start with somebody. I saw a cute picture the other day of a Palestinian boy and a Jewish boy walking hand in hand. Maybe it's going to start with our young generation to get us out of the rut that we're in. Or maybe it's just going to take a church that has faith to believe that God can do the impossible. And that's the God we worship. A God that has made a way, that's been so good, that brought us out, that saved us. And so in just a moment, we're going to sing that song as an invitation song, a song of gratitude for all that God has done, all that God is doing, and all that he will do. Perhaps it is a prompt, this song of gratitude, for us to continue to place our faith and trust in God like Joseph. If you've just been catching glimpses every week of the story, I would invite you to go back and read the entire story of Joseph. Get all the ins and outs, all the stuff that I mangled in trying to retell the story so that you can see this man's faith in its full. Right now, as we sing this song, there's a way that we can be helpful to you, praying for you, journeying with you in your journey of faith. Maybe it's hard for you to see that poor, that bad misfortune, that circumstance, and how it's going to play out in the end. I'm not going to say that I have a full answer. I am saying I'll walk with you. We will walk with you as we uncover and see what God is doing. There's a way that we can pray for you today. There's a way that we can be helpful in your faith journey. There's a way that we can be instrumental in a relationship that you have that there needs to be forgiveness so that life can go on in a healthier and more positive way. We want to be a church for you. So let's stand. Let's sing the song. If there's a way that we can be prayerful for you today, come as we sing.